Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, July 22nd. It is exactly 107 as I speak to you today at 7 o'clock Central Time. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We'll be talking about lots of things in the news. We'll spend some time with President Trump and the press conference with the president of Russia, Putin. Obviously, the president, Trump, that is, made a mistake. He corrected himself. But the media reaction was just so over the top. I mean, these people simply cannot control themselves. I think they end up helping President Trump, as we've spoken before. A lot of madness at the universities across the country. Bill has a few posts about what's going on and how some people are fighting back, which is a good thing, finally. The Democrats are having a little bit of a problem because there are some elements of the party pushing the party to the left, and then there's some elements of the party warning the party about going so far to the left. It's an interesting, I wouldn't call it a civil war yet, but maybe it is going to become a civil war within the party. The Supreme Court and red state Democrats, we'll talk about that, and Senator Manchin in particular in West Virginia. The Speaker of the House may very well be the congressman from Louisiana. I think he would be a very good choice. And President Obama spoke in South Africa, and I think that he didn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, this is an extremely wealthy man who keeps talking about how bad it is to make money. I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. How are you, Bill? Let me give me a minute here to get your, for some reason, your mic is not coming on this end. Let me just, we'll wait for this little thing to to turn on. We're having a, looks like a bit of a problem. Bear with me, Bill, as I bring this up, it's going to come up. I know it is, but it's just a matter of time. While we're waiting for Bill to come on, you know, just a couple of days ago, we celebrated the 49th anniversary of Apollo 11. And I know it's a long time, and I know a lot of the young people probably don't remember anything about Apollo 11, but I thought that was most exciting times in recent memory. I can remember sitting in my parents' living room, remembering and watching that great event. Well, folks, we're having a little problem here with our friend Bill. Let me try this one more time. We're not connecting, or at least I know he's on because we were talking a few minutes before the broadcast. But for whatever reason, his voice is not coming into the server. So let's give this thing a minute here to work itself out. I mentioned the weather in Dallas right now. It was 107. Well, it is 107 as I speak to you right now. And we had a bit of a problem today because we had a baseball game that was being played in Dallas, Texas today, if you can believe it. They were playing baseball, and they decided to go ahead and play baseball on a day like this. And, you know, there were a lot of fans who were not very happy about it because, after all, it's not nice to sit out in a baseball stadium when it's 109. I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. And many of the fans were quite angry about it, to be honest about it. And I think that at some point you have to wonder, you know, when are they going to consider the fans in this equation? Because the fans are the ones who are paying the money. The fans are the ones who are putting up the money, and they're the ones that have to sit out there. I mean, the ball players, of course, are very talented, and they have all kinds of protection in the dugouts, and they can always go in the clubhouse and cool off if necessary. But the fans do not have that luxury. And I think we got Bill. Bill, I'm sorry. We had a little delay there, but I think we finally got you. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's quite all right.
You know, this these bad hot temperatures sometimes get in the cables.
I think that's true, and also Al Gore has his people out to try to demonstrate the effects of global warming. I think that's what just happened.
Well, it always amazes me when we have a day like this, 107, as I mentioned, it's the temperature right now, and it amazes me, how does Al Gore explain this to himself? Because we've had these temperatures for decades. I mean, it's not like they just began here recently. I mean, we can go back 100 years and you had these temperatures in Texas. It's just that nobody called it global warming, Bill.
That's exactly right. They called it weather. It was a very, very dangerous word to use nowadays. We had the same thing here in New York a couple of years ago when we had Hurricane Sandy. And the governor, who, I mean, is really in another world entirely, attributed it to global warming. And he said, it's the worst hurricane since I don't know when. Well, somebody actually looked it up, and it was the worst hurricane since 1826, where there was a worse one. This was before the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
I mean, where was the global warming? It just, but it's interesting that you mentioned that, because there was a poll taken. It was a major poll. I think it was the Gallup poll. It was taken a few days ago on issues of interest to Americans, and global warming ranked about zero.
Mm-hmm.
I think Americans.
But you know what? Go ahead and finish, because there was something very interesting about that poll that maybe we can bring up. You're right. Global warming was way down, but guess what's up there all of a sudden? Immigration.
Yes.
Is up there all of a sudden.
Yes. And I think that if they actually went into the internals of that, when people say immigration, they are not on the side of the Democratic Party.
No, not at all. I think that, in fact, I think Trump has actually touched the nerve on immigration. I think he has. And many of these stories are backfiring on the Democrats. I mean, the story about the families down on the border, obviously nobody wants to separate families, but nobody wants chaos either on the border. So a lot of these stories, there's another poll that came out saying that half, I think it was a Rasmussen poll, that said half of the country blamed the parents, not immigration law, which is interesting as well.
Well, I think that's yes, I saw that poll. Yes, they feel that the parents are putting the children at risk, and they are now reading enough about immigration to know some of these people who are – look, you have to feel for them. You really do.
Sure.
I mean, we're not trying to be cold, but some of them come from Central America, and they go right through Mexico. Now, you know, why would they not, if they're escaping, I mean, they're being portrayed as refugees from all kinds of things. Well, why would they not want to be in Mexico, where they know the language, they have, at least there must be some welcome for them, but they come through to get to the United States, and I can understand it, because here they have certain benefits. It's a wealthy country. And maybe they feel there's a better life here. And I'm all for them if they would do it legally. If they are
really and
truly escaping, you know, a very bad situation, we have provisions for that. And we have provisions for that in American law, where, you know, where if you are a refugee it's an escape situation, we can build housing for those folks. But once they're there, they must follow American law. And this is, I think that you have to ask the question. It's amazing it hasn't been asked publicly. What do you say to all these people around the world, well, like your family, that went through the process, did it legally, became American citizens, took the oath? What do you say to them if you're starting to admit people who've done nothing, who break the law, who don't care, who don't really want to be Americans? I don't know what you say to the people who follow the law. You're a sucker. You should do it our way. And I think that is part of the problem here, that many of the people who favor illegal immigration are actually not ordinary citizens, but they're often people who benefit from illegal immigration, like big companies that employ people with very low wages. And I think, frankly, their attitude toward law has always been a little shady. So,
well, there's a lot of immigration attorneys, too, who I think are making a pretty good living out of all of this, because very often they're getting the government to pay for their fees. So they're not getting Central Americans to pay for their fees. If that was the case, they wouldn't represent them, because they wouldn't get paid. And I agree with you. Look, our family went through this. We came here legally, like most Cubans did. And yes, I sympathize with people, but I also sympathize with the people over here who are saying, okay, great, it's nice to offer them refuge, but who's going to pay the taxes in the school district? Who's going to provide all the health coverage? You have a family with little kids, you got to take care of them, provide them health care and so on. Who's going to pay for that? And that's where I think the argument or the topic backfires for the Democrats, because a lot of people look at it not just with their hearts, but they're looking at it with their pockets, Bill.
I think that's absolutely true. Look, it's a very bad scene, and this is something that people of goodwill can get together on and solve mm-hmm. the problem. But I just don't think that there are too many people who want to solve the problem. There are people who benefit from it, as you say, immigration attorneys. You know, it's like the subject of crime. If you will notice the fact that we have mechanisms that we know about that will reduce the crime rate, and it is amazing how many cities will not employ them, and they won't employ them for political reasons. That mm-hmm. doesn't have the approval of one leader or the other, or it will tend to ratify the political positions of an opposition party, and so the job doesn't get done. And you can extend mm-hmm. that also to education. Well, we know how to educate people. It's not a secret. We've educated generations of kids in many school systems very, very well. But if you employ the very methods that have worked over the years, you offend this group or that group, or you seem to be conservative or traditional, and you can't do that in many political circles today. Very often children suffer because of the vanity of adults.
That's right. Bill, I wanted to, before we get to the topics tonight, I just wanted to go back a couple of days ago. We had another anniversary of Apollo 11. That was such an amazing day, 1969. I remember watching it with my parents in our living room. And what a day that was. And it's hard to believe it's 49 years. But what a day that was, and how this new generation of young people, my sons included, never had an experience like that. And I hope that another generation, a future generation of young people, will at least have the opportunity of space travel to get into
yes.
it, just like we did, Bill.
Well, and yes, and you know, there are these people, and I think it included Obama, who saw no great value in it. I think his comment to his first NASA director was that their main objective was Muslim outreach, which
right.
is just outrageous. And there are plenty of people who just don't understand the importance of dreams. You know, of having that vision of going to Mars and of achieving it. And there's a spiritual component that's very important to a nation's history.
Yes, I think you're right about that. And there was a real feel-good situation, I mean, really feel-good moment, not just in the United States, but everywhere around the world. People were watching this. I mean, it's probably one of the few times when the entire world was tuned in to a moment. And, you know, I remember seeing photographs of people like in different parts around the world looking at big screens, you know, looking at,
oh, yeah.
at Neil Armstrong. I mean, it was quite a moment. So I just hope that a future generation has a chance to experience that space atmosphere that we got to experience, Bill.
I think so. And that is one area of life where you can have wonderful spiritual moments and nobody dies except, of course, in a few tragic accidents. But, I mean, it's not like war. Yes, I guess victory in war is a great moment for a nation that wins, but, of course, at what cost? Whereas space is a peaceful program. It has brought enormous benefits to the human race in the form of technology, in the form even of weather forecasting and agriculture. And we just stopped at some point. We just stopped. And I remember back in even as early as 1980 when the motion picture The Right Stuff came out, which was about the Mercury program. And it was a wonderful movie, and they couldn't find an audience. People by that time had stopped watching. And also by that time, we were beginning to see the introduction of political correctness in the schools and things like that. Didn't matter. Just didn't matter.
Yeah, didn't matter. I suppose they'll say that there wasn't enough diversity in the Apollo program, Bill, or something like that, and they'll figure out some way of maybe bringing down the posters or the pictures.
Well, the latest diversity crisis, I noted this at Urgent Agenda, occurs in Wisconsin, where graduates of the University of Wisconsin are going around the state with ice cream trucks, giving out ice cream to try to publicize the university, because apparently there are a lot of misimpressions, or maybe they're accurate impressions, that they're trying to play down about the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And my concern was, I hope that the ice cream represents the kind of diversity that exists in the ice cream eating community. I hope that the flavors reflect the cultural choices of a number of groups, and if not, they're going to overturn those ice cream trucks.
Well, if they have to do that, what that says to me is that there's a lot of good people in Wisconsin, particularly all those very conservative farmers outside of Madison, many of those dairy farmers and good farmers up there, who are probably sick and tired of all the political correctness out of Madison and the university, Bill.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that very much is it. Look, well, we've talked about this before, but political correctness, which we kind of joke about, is actually quite serious in many universities, now even in corporations, where if you say one thing out of line, they can destroy your life. And it's just, and I think one of the secondary aspects of political correctness that's not being discussed is that it is really, in a way, a training ground to teach young people to live in a dictatorship, which is what some of these people actually want. The press will not report it that way, but the fact is that to some people on the far left, and I guess on the far right as well, democracy is not a popular system. They want to run things, and they want to run things their way, and you will conform to what they want. And they have the power now on college campuses, and it's frightening.
It is. It is very frightening. In fact, speaking of that, you wrote a couple of posts this week, and I thought it was interesting, one of the posts you wrote, saying that people are fighting back, and I hear this all the time too. A lot of students are just simply fighting back, saying, no, we're not going to play this game. And a lot of parents are doing the same thing. So maybe there's a good sign there, Bill.
I think there is, but the fact is there are not as many in that category as we would like, and the fact is also there are plenty of other people on college campuses who probably have very good instincts, but they're completely intimidated, and that includes the professors. I know that I made the point that a professor I heard a few years ago was had enough prestige to be somewhat conservative. Would give speeches, and he would get calls from other professors saying, thank you for saying what we can't say. Well, the idea of anybody not being able to say something on a college campus is itself outrageous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as you're civil, I mean, it seems to me you should be able to say whatever you feel, whatever you want, as long as, you know, you have basic civility. Obviously, you don't want to use bad language, but having a point of view and expressing yourself should never be looked down at a university. I mean, I think the students should be exposed to as many different points of view as possible, and that includes capitalistic points of view that apparently are not very popular in these universities. But I guess the only good news is that eventually these teachers are going to retire, and hopefully the next generation of teachers will have more sense, Bill.
I hope so. There's no guarantee of that, but I do hope so. And apparently, you know, up to a few years ago, we used to think that political correctness was strictly something that was imposed by faculty members. But from what we read nowadays, the conservative students on campus, of whom there are not that many, are saying it isn't just the faculty, it's the students. It's the young people. They're now graduates of high schools where political correctness is practiced. And they say that the students can be very, very intimidating. You toe the line or you'll be excluded. You'll be excluded from discussions. You'll be excluded from the social life of the university. A terrible situation, and one that any responsible leader should speak out against.
Yeah, and the students, for example, who are wearing a Make America Great Again hat, who are being harassed and all of that, I can only imagine what would have happened 10 years ago. If a young man or a young woman wearing a Hope and Change T-shirt, you know, supporting Obama, had been harassed, that would have been it would have been a big story, and you know, so I wouldn't have supported anybody doing that to a young person wearing an Obama T-shirt, but they shouldn't. I don't support it the other way either, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely correct. I mean, look, the double standard in the press is horrendous. And again, I think it's getting worse, not better. The behavior in this last week toward President Trump, accusing him of treason, of comparing his press conference with Putin. One commentator compared it to a Kristallnacht, to
right.
Auschwitz. I mean, my goodness, is there any limit to this?
No, that was absolutely it's absolutely insane. In fact, I want to get into that in our next segment. We're going to take a little break right now. When we come back, I want to talk about that madness that you're talking about, and also get into a little bit of the Democrats and the activities going to the left and everything else going on in the world. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from some of our sponsors. And we'll be right back. Bill, I'm going to leave your microphone on just to make sure we get you back. So
okay.
Let me put you on hold here for a second. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to talk about President Trump's press conference with Putin. There's no question that President Trump made a mistake in what he said, how he answered one question. There's no question about it, and I think most people reacted that way. I certainly didn't like the way he said it either, but he corrected himself the next day. But then, of course, the predictable reaction that Bill was just talking about, these people go nuts, Bill. I mean, it's like comparing it to Pearl Harbor and all
yeah.
these kinds of things. And so you begin to wonder, it's like I always keep saying, every time that President Trump jumps from the ocean liner and he's drowning, these people throw him a lifesaver by how they react, Bill.
Well, that's right. You know, one thing about President Trump is he's very lucky in his enemies. His
yes.
enemies are crazy, and they don't. They're the kind of people who have no respect for the intelligence of the American nation, and as a result, when they act crazy, they don't realize people know it. People really
mm-hmm.
do sense it. The latest NBC Wall Street Journal poll just came out about an hour ago, and it shows Trump at 45%, which actually in that poll is the highest figure in his presidency. And this is coming
mm-hmm.
after all of this stuff in the last few weeks. And I think it reflects a backlash against the critics themselves, who are in a world of their own. I see that the socialists in the Democratic Party
mm-hmm.
are now out going around the country, speaking on behalf of candidates and expecting a groundswell of support, all based on the political victory of this a kind of a dime store Evita we have here in New York, who won the Democratic primary in the 14th Congressional District and toppled a longtime Democratic power. What people are not pointing out about that primary is that the turnout was 13%. She
mm-hmm.
she won the nomination by attracting the votes of 8% of the district's Democrats. And this is called a revolution. Well,
right,
I don't want to be part of a revolution with 8%. I really don't.
That's it. She also wants to turn. She wants to flip districts red, which may be
yes.
Somebody has to explain the colors to her, Bill.
Yes, I think by red she meant
communist,
Marxist red.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
She does not appear to know very much.
She
interviewed by Margaret Hoover at NPR. And she really came off as kind of a high school kid.
Yes.
That's what they want? Fine. But eventually people find out. Now, these are the people who apparently will be the most influential in choosing the 2020 Democratic candidate for president. And I think that could be quite a – I can't wait for that convention. I mean, that convention is going to be an absolute mess. And I can't wait for the you can see the Palestinian flags flying. You can see the quotations from Karl Marx, who the Democrats will probably call Joe Smith. And you can see it reminds me really of the 1968 Democratic Party and the 1972 Democratic Party, which also went all the way over to the fringe left and paid for it very dearly.
Well, what's going to be interesting, Bill, with this this influence from the left is that it's going to probably in about a year they will start having debates. Presidential debates. They're probably going to start very early. It's probably going to be like 20 people on the stage, and MSNBC will probably run them. And it's just going to be one candidate after another demonstrating how far to the left he or she is. It's going to be, you know, one person will say one thing, and then the next person will say, no, I'm more to the left than he or she.
Oh,
and
yes.
It's going to be silly to listen to these people, Bill.
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to see not only the abolish ICE crowd,
right.
You're probably going to see people getting up at that convention, law enforcement.
That's right. All of a sudden, I have two microphones with your number on it, Bill. So you're coming in twice.
Something just came up on my. On my telephone saying Brooklyn, New York, and I think that's it's your other line that must be pinging.
Right.
But as long as it's not interfering with the program.
No,
or
it's not
Al
interfering
again.
With
I think,
us at all.
I think where I... It's interfering with my phone. But
yeah, wait one
second. Okay.
Let me see if I can shut it down over here. I just did. I hope it stops ringing. But I don't know what happened there, but I think it did stop right now. No, it's still going. Did I lose you? This is really funny tonight. We're having a few
Can you hear me?
I can hear you great. All of a sudden, the phone was ringing, and it seems like there were two calls at the same time. I thought that was – but I guess we're fine.
And the other one ended with a nice lady saying, thank you for using Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, okay, great.
I think it was Hillary Clinton doing her new job.
That's it. Hillary has a new career.
Yes.
Now the voice of Blog Talk Radio.
I can just see Hillary up at the platform at the 2020 Democratic Convention, making her last stand, probably wearing a beard, saying, "I'm. Let's go back to the real political left. I'm from the 1960s. The bun will be on. She'll be doing a modern dance. They'll have the convention.
She'll have a t-shirt that said, I had an abortion.
Exactly, yes, and I'm proud of it. And they'll probably move the convention to Woodstock and have it outdoors. And the candidate, whoever he or she or it is, it'll probably be will make a concession speech in rap lyrics. Not a concession but a victory speech in rap lyrics.
Yeah, they'll nominate the first transgender in
2020. That's right.
The basis that they don't want to discriminate against anybody, so why not just do a transgender candidate? But it is interesting that the three people who could very well end up getting that nomination, or at least the ones that the polls are indicating are doing well, are Vice President Biden, Attorney General Holder, and Mrs. Clinton. I mean, but then I see another poll that says 70% of the Democrats want a new face. So I don't know what poll to believe anymore, Bill.
Yes. Well, I think that, you know, it depends on the way those polls are taken. I would imagine those polls were taken among registered Democrats. But just being a registered Democrat doesn't necessarily mean you're alive, especially in Chicago. I mean, so I don't know who they're talking to.
Yes. Yes, those are very interesting polls. But I think I said it before, and I'll put my theory on the table again, that I think that if we get to next summer, the summer of 2019, and it looks more and more like President Trump is going to be reelected, or at least he has the heads up on being reelected. I think you'll see some of the younger ones, like the lady from California or the gentleman from New Jersey, the senators, and some of the others. I think they'll step aside, figuring that it'll be easier in 2024. And that's where I think Vice President Biden comes in. He's the Bob Dole of 2020, Bill.
That may be the case. I don't know. They would first have to tell him there's an election. And then they would have to tell him that Reagan is not on the ballot this year.
That's right.
But look, he has he is actually regarded as a pretty nice guy in Washington. During campaigns, he's very vicious. He says very vicious things. He once told blacks that if the Democrats lost, that the blacks would go back to slavery, which is, of course, a completely ridiculous comment. And I'm not so sure he has any great credence. I think, how old will he be in 2020? I haven't looked it up recently. He'll be about 77 or so. You're talking about one-term presidents, and even that might be too much. It's an absolutely grueling job. And they are looking for young people, but the young people they're coming up with are these people like the, as I call her, the little dime store Evita here in New York, mm-hmm. who lied about her background, by the way, and it only came out after the nominating process. Well, she said she's a little girl from the Bronx, just a little girl from the Bronx. It turns out she was born in the Bronx, but she was brought up in Westchester, which is the eighth most affluent county in the United States, that her father was a very successful architect, that she went to Boston University. And, you kind of wonder what else is in her background.
That's right. That's right. I wonder how many trips to Cuba she took. I would love to know
yes.
that.
I'd love to know that, and I'd like to know how much sugarcane she cuts.
That's
knowing her, probably none.
None, yeah. She spent a lot of time in philosophy class, I'm sure, at the University of Havana, learning about
yes.
socialism, I'm sure. But it is interesting because you do hear from people like Senator Lieberman who are warning the party. I think Senator Lieberman's quote was that if this is the future, I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty sure I'm pretty close to it, that if this is the future, we don't have much of a future. Then Director Comey, I think, ex-Director Comey came out and said that they shouldn't vote for these socialists. And then there's some concern, I guess, across the country from some centrist Democrats. So it's not like the party, clearly it's being pushed to the left, Bill, but it's not like there's a lot of unity in the party about this bill.
No, there really isn't. And the trouble is that the party base is where these people are, the crazies. They're the ones who go to the meetings. They're the ones who lick the envelopes. They have really taken over the party at its grassroots level. That doesn't mean the party generally. But remember also that the Republicans have to behave as well. The president mm-hmm. has got to stop making these mistakes. The mm-hmm. party has to organize. I don't see any great sense of organization. There are Republican governors who are now worrying about turnout. And you can lose an election just by doing nothing. And the Republican Party has a history of working hard to lose elections. I mean, they really are experts at it. And that's what concerns me. And also, the Mueller people, and this, I think, will probably be seen this year, can come in right before a vote with indictments or with public statements. That can mean, even if it means 5 points in an election, that can be decisive.
Yeah. What's interesting about all this polling information, Bill, is that often you read, even on the same page, on Drudge today, for example, there's two lines. One that says, governors, you're right, governors fear lack of enthusiasm. But then the very next line is saying millennials are not going to show up to vote. So it's like, these polls are saying contradictory things, and that's what makes it difficult to really believe any of it. I mean, you read it, you digest it, but you do so with a lot of skepticism, Bill.
Absolutely. And one factor, and it's always the factor that is so hard to calculate, is the behavior of the press. The press is so totally in the tank for the Democratic Party, and that may mean, look, it does count. I like to feel, in my optimistic moments, that the American people are onto the press, which I think they are, and that they will discount what the press says. But I think that even if that's the great majority of people, there are still an element in the United States that believes what they read in the newspapers, and they have not yet become sufficiently woke, to use the term, where they understand what the press is doing. So
yeah,
I think we have a lot of very, very dangerous days ahead. This is not going to be a boring period, and we never know what could come up at the last minute and hit us, especially in international affairs.
That's exactly right. I mean, with a lot of crazy things going on. Bill, you mentioned that, and I want to get back to this point you made a minute ago about where the enthusiasm is in the Democrat Party. It seemed like the younger faces in the Democrat Party are people from the left. And I'm wondering how much of that blame, maybe blame is not the right word, but how much of that is on President Obama and President Clinton and Mrs. Clinton, in the sense that the Democrats did not develop a farm system when they were in power, whether it was Clinton, whether it was Obama. The farm system just isn't there. And so that left an opening for many young people like this lady and this young lady in the Bronx. I mean, whereas in the Republican Party, the Republican Party has a great farm system. Whether they turn out to vote, we don't know, but they have a great farm system. You can look across the country and see all these young governors and senators. I mean, the Republican Party is not lacking in candidates, but the Democrats seem to have only candidates of one type, Bill.
Well, that's it. I mean, they actually have two types. They have the elders who are, you know, really elder. I mean, really getting up there in years. Nancy Pelosi can barely get through a press conference.
Yes.
And then they have the young people. And there are young Democrats who are moderate, but the ones, as you point out, who get the attention are the young nuts. You don't know what happens in a general election. I mean, this is a country that turned its back on John McCain to vote for
mm-hmm.
Barack Obama, who was basically a kid from Chicago. And I think the
mm-hmm.
psychology there was that they wanted to feel good about themselves. They wanted to have this great moment of racial healing. It turned out not to be, obviously, during the Obama administration, but you don't know how voters will react to things, and a candidate who looks impossible, if that candidate gets the help of the press and gets a little bit of luck, can actually squeeze a victory through.
You never know. You're right, and getting the help of the press means a great deal. Look at this young woman from the Bronx. She's just about every time you turn the television on, she's on there.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about this or that, and when she makes idiotic statements like the one that she made about Israel, I mean, she doesn't seem to suffer, at least not, she suffers maybe from people like us, but she doesn't seem to suffer inside the Democrat Party that much, Bill.
Well, I call this the Gloria Steinem syndrome. When Gloria Steinem first emerged in the 1960s, as a, quote, leading feminist, it was not on the basis of any idea she had. It was on the basis of posing in a Playboy bunny uniform. And and that's what got her all the attention. And this woman also, look, she's very attractive. There's no question about
mm-hmm.
it. She's a very attractive young woman. And I think had she looked like Woody Allen and started discussing Marxist theory, the story would have lasted 10 minutes, you know?
Right.
But she's a pretty girl, and that's what gets a lot of attention in any field.
Well, she's very telegenic, that much I
yes.
will give her. I really have not heard her talk that much, so I don't know how well she speaks. I've heard a couple of things, but I've never heard her give a speech, for example.
No, but the things she says are silly. I mean,
yes.
She has no level of information, and she has no level of sophistication. The trouble is, though, that the way the world is set up, if people start attacking her, they're going to play the woman card and say, you're attacking
mm-hmm.
this young woman because she's a woman. It's important that all women come out and support her. Otherwise, women will disappear from the face of the earth. It'll be terrible. We'll be put in prison. And there is a certain effect on that. You know, all it takes in a presidential election usually is to swing 5% of the vote. And that's
sure.
what concerns me, that they play very dirty in the Democratic Party. Everyone's a racist. Everyone's a misogynist. You will go straight to hell if you vote for the Republicans. And, we don't know at that point. First of all, we don't know if Donald Trump is going to run. He says he's going to, but, you know, it's 2 years away.
Mm-hmm.
And second, we don't know how popular he will be in the face of some new Democratic candidate. He is himself very much a political aberration.
Yes, he is. And he does have the ability of making mistakes. Now, the Democrats and the media always throw him a lifesaver, but he has a hard, sometimes he has difficulty thinking on his feet, He's a very smart man, obviously, but sometimes he has difficulty thinking on his feet like he did in that press conference.
Oh, yes.
And his personality, sometimes he gets stuck in a point of view and he won't let go. I mean, he's a stubborn fellow, which is a good quality, but can kill you in politics as well. So, yes,
sure.
He's been very lucky so far that the media reacts the way it does. Had the media reacted differently to this press conference instead of going bananas like they did, if they had had a more rational reaction, maybe this would have done him more harm, Bill.
I think it probably would have, because he did poorly. He also comes off as very egotistical. The media saved him with its craziness and with the craziness of the people they chose to interview. Presidents who don't think quickly on their feet are actually quite common. One of the most common examples of it, by the way, was Kennedy, who was not very good on his feet at all. What saved him at news conferences was his sense of humor. He would crack a joke or something, and it released the tension, and he came off as kind of an attractive guy. But he was effective as a speaker when he had a full speech before him. But trying to speak extemporaneously was not his strong point.
No, and Reagan, too, if you remember.
Yes.
Reagan was often would have problems when he wasn't reading a script, and George W. Bush got better over time, but at first he had the same problem. He had the same problem too. I mean, I think it is a bit unrealistic to expect these people to always have a perfect answer for everything, because sometimes there aren't any perfect answers, Bill.
That's right. And also, presidents have to be especially careful about what they say, because it has an impact internationally. You know, I think we've pointed this out before, but there was a time, I think especially during World War II, when it was not permissible for the press to quote the president directly. In other words, I would have to go back and look up the mechanism. There may have been a way in which a presidential quote could be quoted directly with the permission of the White House, but the traditions were very different than they are today. Today, in my view, the press is often very rude to the president. A press conference is basically a courtesy that is extended by the president of the United States to reporters. It's not a requirement. No president has to talk to the press. None of us has to talk to the press. But they have pushed it and pushed it and pushed it on the part of the press, where they have forgotten the fact that they're really interviewing the world's most important man, and you have to be very careful about trying to destroy him or trying to distort something that he's saying. It can have real repercussions.
Well, and also the other problem, I mean, the other problem that I had with the reaction to President Trump, I mean, again, I think President Trump made a mistake in his delivery, but the idea that, I mean, the press was pushing, there were many in the press, were pushing the idea that number one, Putin has something on Trump, or number two, that they made a big deal, a secret deal together. I mean, it seems like nobody wanted to give President Trump the benefit of the doubt here. That that maybe he's onto something. Maybe he's on a path that none of us can quite see at the moment, but he can see. And I'd rather give him the benefit of the doubt than to assume the worst possible thing about Trump, which is what they do, Bill. They always assume the worst.
Well yes, and that is their default position, that he's a terrible man. That this is. I remember the New York Times basically said it openly. He said this is an unusual situation. It must be dealt with in an unusual manner by journalists. Well, what they meant was, we will turn the whole newspaper into an editorial page, which is what they've done. And I think a lot of these news organizations have seriously damaged their credibility. They really have. I mean, we know that in 2020, whoever the Democratic candidate is, I mean, it could be somebody in prison. They will support that candidate. And, you know, we'll hold the inauguration in cell block 3.
Right. Yes, whoever it is going to get the benefit of the doubt, and I just, that's the part that bothers me the most. Yes, President Trump made a mistake, but the overreaction was just absolutely madness. But I will say one thing about President Trump: he has to be more careful with these things, because he could really get himself in political trouble if. You know, you can only make those kinds of mistakes so many times before it backfires. And I think, again, The media helps him. The media basically throws him the lifesaver. But I thought that I was expecting better of that press conference, Bill. I was expecting a lot better. I think we talked about it last Sunday. I was expecting a different President Trump, and the one that showed up, it looked awfully passive to me, Bill.
Yes, he looked as if he was being defeated.
Yeah, there was just something different about him. This is usually a guy in your face, and now all of a sudden he looked like either he was tired, now maybe he was, a lot of travel that he just finished. But I don't know. He didn't look right to me, though.
He didn't look right to me either, and you make a very good point when people are saying about him, he's got to do better. This is coming from his own party and from many of his supporters, including supporters in the press, like Conrad Black, who have really been remarkably supportive of him. And I think they're basically saying is that, Mr. President, we have given you a break, despite what we knew about you, which was that you were not a perfect candidate. We have tried to support you up to this time because you have some very imaginative ideas, but enough already with the mistakes. And I think that that message is being sent loud and clear by people in his own party and people who support him. And I hope he gets the message and doesn't become just silly and defiant and ignore the message, because the message is accurate. They're doing him favor. They're doing him a favor.
I agree. And I hope he listens to people because, you know, I didn't support him in the primaries, but I think so far I've been pretty happy with the results, you know, the judges, the economy, overall, the foreign policy. But I was very disappointed with that press conference. I mean, I couldn't believe what I had just seen. And it seems like his performance just turned on all these crazy people.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy people basically end up saving him.
Well, and also what is remarkable is the hypocrisy, the absolute utter hypocrisy of these people. I mean, you're talking about individuals who laughed at the idea of a Russian threat, just laughed at it. And back in 2012, you remember when Obama ran against Mitt Romney, Romney warned that Russia was becoming our greatest strategic threat, and Obama ridiculed him and said, it looks like it's the 1980s and it wants its foreign policy back. And they had a field day. Now these very same people are talking about how dire the Russian threat is. We are being led by a traitor who will not understand who Putin is. It's just so phony. It really is. But they are making their point. And in this case, Trump opened himself. Trump really put his jaw out, and it was smacked. And I hope he learns from this week.
I hope so, too, because I think he just I think you're right. I think he opened up himself for a lot of criticism, and much of it was deserved. I mean, a lot of it came from our side, and I was critical of him. I'm glad that he corrected himself the next day, but, you know, he's got to do better. He's got to understand. I guess maybe he hasn't quite. I mean, he was such a businessman for such a long time that he didn't, you know, he didn't always have to calculate everything he said when he was a businessman. But he has to remember that everything he says is going to be analyzed, and there's a group of people out there who are always going to take advantage of anything he says against him. And he needs to understand that, and sometimes I don't know that he gets that, Bill.
I think that is something that is a very good point. What does the president actually believe? You know, what goes through his mind? He is described as a man who will listen to the last person he spoke to. He's also been described as a man who is very, very much subject to flattery. Now, he's got a couple of real crises on his hands, and one of them, that which we haven't mentioned thus far, is that the Korean talks are not going well. And, you know, he expected better results by now. Now, what he should do, he cannot fall into the trap of other presidents of going on and on and on. He should report to the American people and say, we are suspending these talks because they have not gone as they should have. We are not getting the concessions, and we will not make any improvements in North Korean's economy without the concessions that we need. And they have got to be made to understand that. And the American people will support them.
I think you're 100% correct, Bill. I think he's got to deal with that as soon as possible, because I think a lot of Americans expected a different result. And I think he also has to clean up this perception on the part of so many people that he is somehow Putin's buddy. I mean, I never thought he was, but a lot of people believe that, Bill.
Well, and they believe it more now because of the events of the last week.
Yes. You're right.
So, and now, you know, people say, well, look, this will pass like everything else passes. And he does have a kind of unique ability to get out of trouble. That you know, he did it repeatedly during the campaign. But I think the reason for that, it was goodwill taught him by an electorate that didn't want to elect Hillary Clinton. And they were basically said to themselves, look, we know what we're getting. We're getting a coarse, vulgar man, but a man who has capability and a man who does at least have a vision for the country. But I think that welcome is being worn out.
I think you're right. Bill, let me just spend a couple of minutes on President Obama in South Africa. I guess he went there for a Nelson Mandela anniversary. I think so,
yes.
Not 100%, which is fine. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Nelson Mandela because I admire the fact that he was a political prisoner. I understand all of that, and I'm happy that apartheid is history in South Africa. But the country's a mess.
Yes.
You know, the economy is a disaster. Now they're on the brink of racial conflicts there between I guess the black majority and some of the white farmers over distribution of land. I mean, that country is a total mess. And it seems to me that if I'm going to give a Nelson Mandela speech, that's fine. But if I'm going to give a speech about human rights and fears of strong men, South Africa is the last place in the world that I give a speech like that, Bill.
Exactly. And I think the symbolism of going to South Africa was very bad. It was very, very bad because it has, no matter how you put it, it has a racial component. You know, our first black president is speaking about domestic things, not in his own country, but in an African country. It just is. It violates a very, very strong tradition in American politics that if you're going to criticize the country or you do or the administration, you do it at home. And especially for an ex-president to do this. And it also brought back memories, which are not pleasant memories, of his behavior in office toward foreign countries and toward foreign leaders when Margaret Thatcher died, Britain's first female prime minister, and someone who was an extraordinarily important prime minister. I don't even think he sent a high-level delegation to the funeral. I think he was criticized for it at the time. But when Nelson Mandela died, he went personally. It's a double standard that begins to grate on people after a while. I don't think he did well, especially speaking in a South Africa that is no ornament to human rights. It is still run by a bunch of old. We're still run by a bunch of old communists. It has a terrible record and history of sexual violence against women. And you would think he would know better, but he didn't.
Well, and also I'm getting tired of all of the references about people who make money. He makes a lot of money himself. I mean, he's doing fairly well, and that's great. I'm happy for him. I'm happy that he's making a lot of money. I have no problem with that. I just don't want to hear the criticism of others who are successful too, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, this is the hypocrisy of the Democratic Party. It is a party that presumably claims to speak for the common man, even though they don't like the common man. Hillary Clinton referred to those people as deplorables, and yet they claim to speak for them. And yet who is financing most of the Democratic Party today? Billionaire industrialists who just want to feel good about themselves. You know, I've got mine, so now let me trash others who have theirs so that I can feel good about myself and come off as a philanthropist. And it is just this bizarre cycle in the Democratic Party of going after the very people who are financing the party as long as they're just in that group and they're not in the party. It's almost hard to explain it, but it's strange.
Well, it's weird. It seems like if you're a rich person and you like climate change, you're okay. But if you're a rich person and you don't believe you're skeptical of climate change, then you're not okay. It's almost like it's divided that way, Bill. This millionaire, billionaire, whoever he is, in California who's financing all these campaigns.
Oh, Steyer.
He's one of the richest guys in the world. I don't see anybody questioning how he made his money. But
he made it on oil.
That's it. And then the Koch brothers become the big enemies of mankind, Bill.
That's right. And I hope the American people see through it. Look, the election is only 3 months away, the midterm, and it's a critical midterm. At the very minimum, the Republicans must hold the United States Senate because that's where judges are confirmed. And I don't know if they're – you look at the statistics state by state, it's very touch and go. So let's see it. Trump has got to be out there on the stump constantly. It has to be a positive message. He must avoid mistakes. And the White House should have operating right now a committee that is dealing only with the politics of any announcements that will be made by Mueller between now and then. They have to be prepared to immediately counter it.
That's right. And I think the president needs to focus on the midterms and everything else. A lot of stuff is always going on when you're president, but he has to really be focused on those red state Democrats. He's got to win some of those seats and hold on to the House. Bill, as always, thank you for your time. It's always a great honor to chat with you. I apologize about the mistakes at the beginning, but I think we got that done. But we got most of the show in. In fact, the whole show in, and always had a great time as always. But we'll get together again next Sunday, and I'm sure
absolutely
there'll be some. Will be some things to talk about then. Hopefully it's not 107 the next time I call you.
I hope you have much better weather, and I look forward to next Sunday.
Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I always recommend Urgent Agenda to all of our friends. It's a great place to get information, good place to get analysis, and checking it every morning, checking it every evening is something that you're going to enjoy a great deal. Well, it's 107 in Dallas. It was 107 an hour ago. It probably hasn't changed much. But anyway, I hope if you're coming to Texas, bring a swimsuit because you're going to need to go to the swimming pool quite a bit. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and thank you for listening.